Okay, then I can get started with the roll call. Lisa Gillis.
Here.
Eric Simon.
Here.
Beth Chang.
Here.
Gary McLean.
Here.
Susan Charette.
Here.
Shannon Roberts. Lauren Behan.
Here.
Ellie Raitt.
Here.
Charlotte Meyer.
Here.
Luke Gilfillan.
Here.
Charles Rozier.
Here.
Okay, and do we have any public comments?
Okay. Well, actually, no. We're doing public comments after. Actually, no. We can start with public comments because, okay, this is what we have to explain. Maggie is a resident volunteer. And so, like, we need to be that formal. Like, somebody has to tell me this one day. But so, I don't know if maybe, Eric, if you go first and you and Maggie can tag team, or if you want to go last and then we can just add the public comments afterwards.
No, well, why don't we get it done so Lauren, or so Maggie can move on with her life. But I did want to mention that Lauren and Maggie are defending champions. So, I want to make sure that gets in the record for this. I don't even know of what.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
And Maggie, you can get off now. That's all we wanted to do.
Deep sea tennis champions.
Okay.
Deep sea tennis.
So John, yes. Can you make sure please that gets its own section in the notes?
Yeah, I'm sure it'll confuse everyone.
Beginners.
Next month. Yeah.
The best of the worst.
Tallest of the pygmies. Okay, so as Lisa said, and a lot of people on this, if not everybody on this call, know Maggie. Maggie's been super generous with her time and her applying her professional expertise to help us, and hopefully this is just the beginning, work on some electrification opportunities within River Forest. So along with John Anderson, we've applied for a grant which is, and correct me if I'm wrong, guys, so it's through ComEd, but it's being managed by the Metropolitan Mayor's Caucus.
Right, and it's a ComEd grant, but yeah, the Mayor's Caucus is kind of the portal where you apply the grant.
Okay, and we've applied for that grant, right, John?
We have not yet. I was going to soon, but I wanted to just get any feedback from the commission. The grant isn't due until the end of the month.
So I believe, go ahead.
We were going to run a draft by the contact that John has at the, with
right.
the mayor's caucus, just to make sure we were on the right path, right? That was the next step.
And wanted to make sure everybody here on the commission, you know, understood what was going on. So Maggie, do you want to maybe just talk a little bit about what this particular one covers, and John can fill in gaps too on the funding piece?
Sure. I really haven't done very much. I've just attended a couple of meetings with John and Eric, as they have told me how we're going to go about it. And I've just asked some good questions and then they've given me good answers. But we are looking at a couple charging stations. That's correct, John, right? That we've received some estimates on in terms of implementation. Right. And with the ComEd grant opportunity, that should cover half of the costs of the implementation. And so when John takes you through kind of what that entails and the cost, you'll have a better understanding of what will need to be covered. And I do believe we have some funds available to cover that other half, which John can go into detail with. But the good news is I think we're well positioned to apply for the grant. Eric did some good research with Oak Park on the stations that they've put in so that we feel pretty good about our approach. And as John mentioned, the timing is end of month. So I think we just want to get your blessing that we're on the right path before we go ahead and apply. So that's basically it. And I don't know if John, you want to take them through the vendor that we talked with and what the estimate entails?
So I'll just take it from the beginning. About a year ago, I attended an energy efficiency related meeting with the Metro Mayor's Caucus, and someone there was a vendor for installing electric vehicle charging stations and assisting people with that process. And then this grant opportunity became available. So I had this company, it's called Green Ways to Go, come out to the Village Hall and basically walk the site and see the best location for this. And we happened to have an electrical control box right on Central behind Village Hall, south side of Village Hall, and those angled spots there. And the thought was to get a quote for an installation of an electric vehicle charging station that's a dual charging station where you can charge on either side of it. So you can get two parking spots where vehicles can be charged. And he provided a quote for one that's a charge point unit, and it's a level 2 charging station. So it would charge pretty rapidly. And the total cost for that was with the charging station and the installation, it was $16,430. So the way this ComEd grant works is you would ask for half of that cost. So we'd be asking for $8,215, and then we'd pay $8,215.
John, just to interrupt, is that the latest cost? Because I know that we had an estimate from, I think, last year, and then you're going to have him come back out again.
Right. So he did come back out, and he was getting me that new cost. I don't quite have that new cost yet. He hasn't sent that yet. I'm thinking it'll be similar because it's just a year apart. I don't think it'll be much different, but we want the most updated cost. So when that comes in, if it's drastically different, we can regroup, but I'll just have to change a few of the numbers in the application and send that in and run it by the Metro Mayor's Caucus. And this is the Powering Safe Communities grant through ComEd. So they actually specify electric vehicle charging stations as an item you can use. So it's not like we're reaching for something that's not attainable. You know, hopefully we'll get it. Maybe we won't, but I think it's worth trying.
John, where would the rest of the remaining $8,000 come from?
So we do have the money coming in from the Green Electric Aggregation Program, if you remember, and that's coming in at on a regular basis. And I know that the commission wanted to use those funds for sustainable projects. And that's the thought, to use the money coming in from that for this project.
Okay. So when you say regular, it's coming in like monthly?
Right. I would have to check with finance as far as if it comes in monthly or quarterly. I don't remember off the top of my head, but it is coming regularly.
Right, and basically in the 2 years, is it $26,000 a year or $30,000?
I think it was around 30.
Yeah, so basically then that we just bank that and we use it for what we would, you know, what we think is kind of, you know, important to do. But
Right. And so one of the things I'm going to put in the application is the charging station would be used. Obviously, it can be used for residents, visitors to Village Hall, the surrounding area, but the goal is to get an electric vehicle for the village to use for code enforcement, building department to begin with, when the current vehicle needs to be replaced, which is right now it's a Ford Focus. So when that needs to be replaced, then we'd have a charging station on site that we can use for the new electric vehicle. So we can kind of move in that direction.
And did you say where it would be, John?
Yes, so it's on Central Avenue, right up against the Village Hall parking lot. So I don't know if you're familiar, but it's those angled spots right on Central. So that way it's close to to the park also.
Mm-hmm. And Eric, I don't know if you want to talk a little bit about, we talked about making sure that residents just don't park there all day using the charging station. And so Eric, I think you asked Oak Park about that, we talked a little bit, within your own company about just time limits on that, correct?
Yeah, we talked about that a little, you know, because ChargePoint is kind of the pervasive supplier of units for municipal use. Part of the reason is we can create the rules that we want for those. So for example, in Oak Park, you get 2 free hours of park. You get 2 free hours of charging before charge point kicks in and starts actually charging you for per kilowatt hour for whatever you're using beyond that. So we can create rules to make sure that somebody just doesn't camp out there the whole time. It gets tricky, right? Because like, you know, somebody could still park there and not even be charging. And there's other things we need to kind of work on with River Forest Police and things like that on kind of how we want to manage this and what kind of code enforcement there's going to be. But I think we would follow that same model that really I've seen everywhere, which is 2 free hours, which is generous, by the way, is because that's free fuel for electric vehicles. And then after that, we're not trying to get a profit on this. So the rate that ChargePoint charges after that would be basically their retail rate without us charging more than that for profit. So we have flexibility with how we do that.
But if the car charges in 2 hours, it wouldn't charge. I mean, if it charged in the electric sense in 2 hours, it wouldn't keep.
Correct. Yeah. So if the charger's in the car, it's right. These are just power receptacles. But you're right. Like basically the car would cut it off and you wouldn't be charging them if they were there for 3 hours and only charged for two.
I mean, the good thing about that spot is it is right south of the police station, right?
Yeah. Right.
So people I work right there and people don't tend to mess around when they're parked across.
you've tried, Susan, and it's just.
I have tried.
I think it's a good like kind of first step. I mean, we talked about EV charging. The question is, where do we put them? This is a good one, I think, because it will ultimately then support the long-term vision of having a electric vehicle for the village.
And there's a lot of, we've talked about this before in other meetings, but the value of having electric charging for the public, I think we all admit isn't suspect, but it isn't like, we're not going to drive massive retail business to the retail core, through chargers and things like that. So this is a really good proof of concept. The fact that we're getting 50 cents on the dollar for it makes it a really good thing for us to do. And me personally, I think it's just good for messaging, to show our residents that, this is something we care about. It's something that we're supporting. And I think that's maybe as important as anything.
Well, I think the location is much better than some of the earlier ones that were being discussed. And I agree that the grant makes it, more attractive investment for the village. And John, I assume that from what you're saying is that as the village does long-term kind of whatever capital investment budgeting, that it would budget for an electric vehicle in the future. It's like a chicken and egg thing, right? Like if you don't have the charging station, you don't want to get the vehicle, but now that you have that. So, as long as that's kind of, in the long range planning so that we don't end up with a charging station that no one's using.
It is, yeah, and the Ford Focus that I mentioned, I believe the end of its useful life is in about 2 years. So,
okay.
The thought would be to replace that. It's just a small vehicle, electric vehicle.
Great.
Do
we need some sort of a yay or nay, or do you have all the feedback that you need?
Well, so there is an ask in here, right? So, I'm not sure what our process is for how we want to allocate the $30,000 per year we're getting on the aggregation program. So there is an ask in here, and I guess it's a question for John, how from a parliamentary standpoint, how we want to deal with that.
I mean, I think as long as there's consensus and there aren't any objections, I'll proceed. I mean, technically I could, just plow forward with this without going to you guys, but this is obviously a sustainability project and I want to bring all those up to you guys. So
why don't we do this?
Unless there's any major concerns. Yeah. Go ahead, Lisa.
I could just kind of say I could put forth a motion and we can have a second and a vote.
Sure. Yeah. That's
good. I will put forth a motion. I'm not good at this, but I will put forth a motion that the Sustainability Commission move forward with the grant opportunity for the Powering Safe Communities by ComEd to purchase a charging station that we're going to confirm the cost, but the preliminary cost was $16,000 split two ways, that half of it would come from the grant, the other half would come from our funds for the that we're getting from the community green aggregation. Now we need a second.
A second. It's a great idea.
Okay. So then I guess we have to ask everybody, John.
Right. So who had the second? Sorry, I missed that. I'm just doing the
minutes. It was Lauren.
Lauren.
Oh, okay.
Hey, can I just pause just for a sec, just before we take a vote? I am curious from the student commissioner standpoint, if you guys have thoughts on this. I think you guys are kind of in a unique position because most of you are driving age or really close to driving age. On kind of, you know, what you think about the messaging and the effort.
Well, from the youth standpoint, electric vehicles are all the buzz among youth. So I think this is something that a lot of people around my age would definitely be supportive of.
Cool.
We also have a very progressive neighborhood. Sorry. So I would assume that within like the next 10 years, there's going to be double or triple the amount of electric vehicles. So this is really a great thing to do.
Okay.
So I'll call the vote. This just a reminder, the student commissioners can't vote. So Lisa Gillis?
Yes.
Eric Simon?
Yes.
Beth Chang?
Yes.
Carrie McLean?
Yes.
Susan Charette?
Yes.
Lauren Behan?
I think she's frozen.
Okay.
Put it in the chat, Lauren.
All right.
He is frozen.
Oh, Reed? Oh, yes. Sorry.
Okay.
Hi.
So Lauren, did you say yes?
She just did in the chat.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I think we have a bandwidth issue here.
Okay. Great. So I'll go ahead and keep moving forward with that.
So, okay. So Maggie, you're more than welcome to stick around, but like sounds like you need to probably start training for deep sea.
Eric, I'm so glad that you understand. That's absolutely right. I'm gonna go lift some weights. Thanks for including me. I appreciate it.
Thanks for all your help, Maggie.
See you guys soon.
Yep.
Bye.
Okay. And I think we actually have some, I guess public comments. We talked about the fact that, Rick is listening, but then Jan Sager and David, thanks for joining us. David Hoyt had submitted a suggestion that's on the agenda for later. So do we want to, I don't know, David, do you want to talk about it since you're here? And then you can, you know, kind of stay for kind of the conversation that would happen after we get through anybody else's public comments and we can, you know, kind of do the commissioner thing.
Unmute.
You're on mute.
Unmute.
Okay.
Yep.
Perfect. Thank you. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks for letting me come talk. I don't really have like a big plan. I just was thinking about some of the issues that have been coming up in the campaign here in River Forest and regarding climate change, a potential climate change action plan. And it occurred to me that there are some things that I think are kind of overlooked in a lot of these plans that have to do with landscaping and biodiversity, both of which I think play key roles in any kind of larger comprehensive plan, especially in the suburbs where people have big yards. And so I know the National Wildlife Federation, along with a lot of conservation organizations, has a program that seems to be pretty well designed to encourage people to take steps with their own properties, but then also to sort of lay out a map at the community level for institutions and the municipality to encourage things that increase biodiversity and at the same time achieve a lot of the kind of goals, because everything's tied together as a climate change, any kind of climate change agenda. So I may be reinventing the wheel. I don't know. I'm kind of new to the community, but just looking at their program, it sounded like it would be a really easy template to adopt and to follow. And it would achieve the, it would have the benefit of helping really to educate, I think, the public, residents here in River Forest, as to the value of a whole set of landscaping practices that have, that address biodiversity as well as climate change and different varieties of pollution control. So I think Lisa shared the link, and it's all right there. But it's just something I thought I would put out there. And you're all busy people, and maybe you're already doing stuff like this. I don't know. But.
No, I mean, we're always looking for different things to do from a green ecosystem perspective. So it is something I think we can look at. Susan, I don't know. I mean, you're our kind of our green ecosystem like maven. Do you have any thoughts? I don't mean to put you on the spot, so you can just say I need to think about it.
I think it's a great idea. I think it's a really good idea. And I'd be happy to work with you on this if this is something you have a passion about.
Yeah, I mean, I'm actually kind of you might call it a gardener for wildlife. Something I've gotten really into lately. Perhaps you are as well. I know it's very, there's a lot of action on this front in Oak Park, but it seems like. Seems like there could be a little more here in River Forest. And I think the sort of the orientation of this program, it seems it's very low cost, but is primarily towards educating folks about some of these principles. And I think I'd be happy to help with that. I think there's a lot of room for growth there.
Yeah, I mean, we've tried to get at that on a smaller level with the Parkways for Pollinators. I don't know if you're aware of that. We've planted 55 of these. They're 40 square feet, so it's not a tremendous amount, but it's a start, and it's supposed to be educational. And the Healthy Lawns is getting at that too. But I mean, I think there's always more to be done. There's a great film. Do you watch the films at the One Earth Film Festival?
I should watch more. I try to catch them when I can.
So there's one film. A lot of the films are available on other platforms. So I sometimes use a list, and then I try to see what I can watch in other ones. So there's one. I would recommend it for everybody, called Kiss the Ground. Talking about how, I mean, there's really no way we can meet the climate goals with electric vehicles, with solar energy, because there's already so much carbon out in the atmosphere. We have to sequester it. So there's no solution that exists without sequestering more carbon. And as you said, you know, what we have an opportunity to do here, since we're not a cement jungle, we have the opportunity to do this in our yards and in the trees and everything else. So I think there's tremendous room for greater education on that. And also, and I don't know how to do this, but how to change the culture, that there's something to be gained in having this, you know, pristine green lawn with full of pesticides, which is doing very little to support. And I think a lot of people's flooding problems lean back, you know, go back to the fact that if they had plants with deep roots, it would be absorbing this water that instead is going into their basement and causing all this trouble. So I think there's, tremendous room for growth in that area. So,
David, have you signed up for the Healthy Lawn, Healthy Garden program? Is there a sign in your front yard?
I do. We have that sign up Yeah, yeah, no, I was happy to sign up with that as soon as we found out about it. And I think that's a great program. And I'd sort of like to build on that. And I think this National Wildlife Federation certification would certainly incorporate that and the pre-existing programs you have. I mean, all these conservation groups, Audubon, the Forest Preserve, you can certify your yard as somehow or another conservation, bee friendly, bird friendly, what have you. This one in particular, I think, is just global and can kind of incorporate all of that and help people understand how, you know, decline in bird populations, pollinator populations, and carbon sequestration all kind of come together. And that's really useful. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and like Susan was saying, I personally think that the suburban lawn is going to be one of the last great ideological and practical barriers to the conservation movement in this country. It's an enormous inertial artifact. And I'd like to start taking a crack at it.
I think it'll be a draw between that and industrial agriculture, but.
Yes, well, we exactly, you know, and I was thinking a lot of the principles that animate the sort of land stewardship that can be practiced in river forest are valid in agriculture as well. So I think there's room for some perhaps urban-rural collaboration there.
Well, David,
anyway,
thank you for bringing that to our attention and for your energy and interest in working on it. I have one question. I have to apologize that I haven't read the whole thing, but just at a high level, is this like a community certification if you get a certain percentage of your homeowners to convert their, you know, get their own properties certified? Is that basically what it's doing?
There, as I understand it, based on the population of the village, we would need to get a certain number of properties.
Okay.
Excuse me. Some of those would be residential, others would be municipal, commercial. And as we're able to do that, and then also, I guess, design and implement certain outreach programs, we would get this certification. So it's a goal-based program. We would have to sort of strive for it. And then I think every year you recertify. And then, so I guess there would have to be some coordination with elected government.
I know we have other agenda items too, but just who would certify the individual properties?
The National Wildlife Federation.
Yeah.
You know what? I went through it. It didn't take very much time at all, and it was very educational, but okay. It appears to be a self-certification.
I see.
Yeah. I could sign up right now.
Yeah. You select little, you know, bubbles that apply.
Okay.
And it does get you to think about these different areas of, you know, your landscape and if you are providing them for wildlife. And then if you desire, you can purchase a $20 sign, which is a really nice looking sign. And you know how we are about signs here in River Forest. But it's a very nice looking sign.
Okay, thank you. I apologize. Yeah, I mean, I didn't read it in advance. Thank you.
I think for you, any individual can do that for their yard. But then I think for the community, for River Forest to get on their map, there would need to be some coordination.
It's a point system where you meet certain things and you get certain points. And there's 1, 2, 3, 4 sections where you have to meet certain points. By donating five wildlife garden or other project relating photos, you get 3 points, or 5 points. So, you know, I mean, there's definitely things, it's just as worth that you have to show them that you've done this. And I think you have to do it annually. Is that what I read?
Yeah. And they want you to have an organization. They want you to show that, you know, you have 3 to 5 people whose job it is to, you know, keep an eye on this thing, keep it alive from year to year, go back to the organization, et cetera, publicize it. So there would have to be some kind of, you know, infrastructure on our end.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So why don't we take that back, Susan? Why don't you and I talk about it and see how we can work it? And I don't know if David, if we could recruit you to seriously be a resident volunteer, which is something that we are starting to do. As you can see on this committee, we have adult commissioners who are, like, I guess, appointed by the, you know, by the village. And then we have student commissioners who apply and are also appointed. And then we're Maggie, who I think you saw left, she's a resident volunteer. And so it's, we do have a lot of work to do. And so we're trying to figure out ways to, you know, kind of really tap into folks with passion and expertise that can help us. So if that's something you're interested in, we don't want to put you on the spot now, but, you know, certainly we can, you know, kind of recruit you to perhaps help with it.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just, you know, let me know how and you know, yeah, happy to help. Okay. I don't want to run for any office or be, you know, I'm just happy to help.
It can just be, along, that'd be great. A project-based volunteer.
Exactly.
You're just
exactly.
volunteering to do this one thing.
That would be
sounds awesome. Good. Okay. Well, let me know then.
Yeah, I'll connect you guys.
Okay.
All right.
Good. Thanks okay. for bringing it to our attention.
Yeah,
thank you for listening.
Thank you.
Okay, take care.
And you can watch the rest of that. We're not trying to kick you off. We're just going to keep going.
I'm just going to mute myself.
Okay. All right. Do we have any more public comments, Jan? Are you you have a comment? You're just watching. Okay. I know Jan, so. All right. So let us continue with the rest of our agenda. I already said hi to you, Rick. Rick is saying, my husband's saying, what about me, as he listens while he's making dinner.
He's yelling through the door.
Yelling through the door, yes. All right, hold on.
Or maybe he has something he wants to say. Hi, Rick. Does he have a comment he wants to add?
No. All right, so basically, okay, we did call to order. We did public comments. We talked about, we still have to finish going around the room for commissioners.
Actually, Lisa, we haven't approved the minutes.
Right. So you want to approve the minutes?
Right.
The time, John? Motion to, I guess John usually says, does anybody have any comment?
Yeah, is there any comment on the meeting minutes?
I move to approve. I didn't have any comments.
Okay. All right, Lisa Gillis.
Yes.
Eric Simon.
Yes.
Beth Chang.
Yes.
Carrie McLean.
Yes.
Susan Charette.
Yes.
Lauren Behan.
Yes.
Okay, minutes are approved.
Okay. All right, and is everybody okay? We didn't go around and do, it's not on the agenda, so somehow it fell off the agenda, is commissioner reports. But I think most of the commissioners are talking. So if we go around the room, if you want to start with your agenda item and then we can add in anything else you want to say, just in the interest of time. Is that okay with everybody?
Yep.
Yes, okay.
I'm not on the agenda and I have a lot to say, but I don't have to go now.
Okay, why don't you keep going with that? Because the resident proposal, we just talked about David. So why don't you go and then we'll go back to, then we'll just keep going around the room.
Okay. Hold on, I just have to pull up some notes then. Sorry. Let's see. So yeah, all of my stuff is starting up because
it's springtime.
Because it's springtime. Where am I? Here we go. Okay. So there was a Planet Green meeting February 18th. Oh, come on.
When are they doing, while you're doing that, when are they doing their final metrics?
Oak Park?
The Planet Green.
Oh, that's part of my report.
Oh, okay.
So, so Planet Green, and for David, do you know what Planet Green is? No. So Planet Green is a joint sustainability plan between Oak Park and River Forest. It was a 10-year plan. This is the last year of the plan. And so they're discussing ways of going forward. So a lot has been done. Lisa was referring to metrics. They normally do metrics every 2 years. They are slated to do them this year. So I guess I could jump to the part about the metrics, which is they've decided they're not going to do them because I think one of the reasons is that with COVID, they think that they would be non-representative. Like a lot of things happened this year that's not really telling us a lot about trends. So instead, they... produced some energy metrics, which I forwarded to Beth and Shannon, which hopefully they read. Yes, Beth, maybe.
Sorry, I did not.
You don't, but you remember I sent it, right?
I can resend it.
So basically most of the meeting was about like going forward. And there were like, I think there were about 10 areas before. So the big feedback is that it's going to be more focused because progress has been made in all areas, but it's very diffuse. And the one thing that really is at the core of this going forward is a thread of equity going through because the burdens and the benefits are being very unequally distributed. So going through each thing is a core of equity. And so their specific points are engaging more people of color in Planet Green itself, engaging communities outside of Oak Park and River Forest with lower income residents, and they are looking to us to reach out to Maywood in that regard. Clean energy is going to be a focus. Waste, supporting the Oak Park Climate Action Plan. So when they wrote that into this 10-year plan, I said, what about River Forest? And basically what they said was they didn't have any indication that River Forest was inclined to develop a climate action plan. So I'll just put that out there. That's what they said. And the last thing is youth. So youth, okay. Engaging youth. Yeah, so I already said this about, yeah, so Gary shared information on CO2. I already said that. Well, I don't know how much you want to know about this, but there was a special Village of Oak Park meeting. They, you know, this was part of our Planet Green meeting where essentially they just focused on energy issues. And I don't know if I reported on this before, but Laura Dirks, who is the chair of the Environment and Energy Commission in Oak Park, which is the parallel to our Sustainability Commission, that's just what they call it. They had put together an ad hoc sustainability action planning group. So this was really like sort of preliminary information on how to go about a climate action plan. Because one thing that differentiates a climate action plan from a strategic plan is the Sustainability Commission can come up with a strategic plan, but a climate action plan is involving all of the actors in the village. So we can't unilaterally come up with something that the park district is going to follow and the township and all, you know, the businesses and residents. So there needs to be input from all areas in order to make this truly a comprehensive plan. And so the findings of this initial thing is that energy efficiency is where the bang for the buck is. So everybody wants to talk about, you know, solar energy and electric vehicles and all these other things. But if we don't stop wasting so much energy, then just switching over to solar as opposed to our more dirty ways of doing it. So that, I think, was an important finding. And so they had ideas about how to do this, create a residential retrofit grant fund. There's actually a lot of programs out there which are free. Hopefully everybody on this commission knows about the ComEd Energy Efficient, which addresses both the NICOR and ComEd. But, you know, just I don't think we could ever advertise that enough. Just, I mean, everybody in the village should do that. It's not free, but it is at no additional cost. Yeah, so a lot of talk about that. And okay, so that's the Planet Green Commission. And then the other thing is I just want to report on the two things that are getting going. So one is the community garden. So we've changed the rules a little bit this year in the community garden to take into account that there were in fact non-resident gardeners in the garden since its inception 2 years ago. So we're just laying that out so people don't have to falsely use residents' addresses to say that. But I mean, I'm a gardener there, so I start talking to people and they have no idea who I am. So they openly tell me like, oh yeah, I live in River Forest. I have two gardens. I'm like, really? So we changed it this year. But what we're going to do is we opened it up in March only to residents. So if anybody knows a resident, I've been trying to advertise this as best I can, but if anybody knows a resident that's interested, it's best to get there in March because it will open up. I mean, I don't think we're going to do a wide campaign about it in other villages, but other people, people from other villages can sign up after that.
Can we, if you want to write a short blurb for Facebook and Instagram, we can get the village.
Well, I have been, the park district put it out there and I've been sharing it on.
Okay, perfect.
And I believe the village's Facebook page shared it as well. I can go back and check that, or we could share it there, but yeah. So they have a nice graphic and we've been sharing that. So that's one project. Then the other one is the park waste for pollinators. So I inherited this grant that I actually didn't know a lot about. And in filing the final report, we actually didn't do all of the things that we said we would do in the grant. So prior to filing the report, I am doing those things that we said we would do. And I think I'm pretty much caught up on that. And John's given me some additional information. So I'm should be able to file that soon. We were hopeful that we would, this is the ComEd Open Lands Grant, and we were hopeful that we would get another one for the next year. They are not very encouraging about that. They you know, they say that they don't just refinance the same programs. So we would have to make it look
like different, a different program.
Different program. And we did change some things about the program. So, and then the last thing I just wanted to say was just to put in another plug for the One Earth Film Festival for anybody that doesn't watch those films. I don't know if you all use Canopy through the public library, but I found three of the films that are available on Canopy, including the one that that the Village of River Forest is sponsoring, the Nature Makers. That's how I was able to preview it. Gather, and as I said before, Kiss the Ground is on Netflix, all excellent films. So just encourage you all to do that. And I'll leave you with the end of Kiss the Ground, which is narrated by Woody Harrelson. He does a really good job. And his last words are, "I'll make you a deal. I won't give up, and neither should you."
Nice. I have a question, and maybe Mary, have you talked to Mary about the I can't think of the word now, the herb garden? Is she still helping the park district do that, or is she letting those guys just run with it?
I don't know. It was not fantastic. I can ask her. We've spoken many times, but we have an herb garden in the community, within the community garden. I pretty much do that with Roberta Appleby, I know she has in the past, but we haven't talked about it this year.
You mean the herb garden across the street from my house?
Yes.
Oh.
Did you think it was well done last year?
Yeah, they had, people were out there working on it for hours one day.
This year?
Last year. Yeah, they did a nice job last year. They hadn't done it the year before because Julie, I think, she was there planting mm-hmm. when we first moved in. But no, they spent a lot of time, and they go by there, I don't know, maybe just a couple times a year to water, but they're there.
A couple times a year?
Yeah, they don't water very often, but they do go over there sometimes to water. But it seems to be doing fairly well. I see, you know, I mean, I sit there, you know, I can see it from my office door, but people sit out there a lot. It's really interesting. People gather there. It's very nice. Yeah, it's really nice. So,
I mean, I think the challenge there is, I think they have to make sure they plant, you know, obviously deer, you know, stuff that the deer won't eat. And then they're also trying to make sure that they don't have, like, if for example, if you plant mint, it would take over. So that's why they
have it in they put it in containers and everything. It's very, nice.
But it would just be like it would just be interesting to know if she's still I know that sometimes the park district wasn't the best partner. But I just don't know if she's given up or if she's still doing it. So
I'll ask her. About half the plants are perennial, so it's really just the basil. Mm-hmm. The basil, I mean, if they only water it a couple of times a year, that would explain why the basil doesn't grow. But I mean, I would say the herb garden at the community garden probably gets watered every other day, at least until everything is up and going.
And the community garden is the one up by the pumping station, right? Up on.
Yeah, right. But so there are 22 or 24 plots within it, but then we have two common gardens. One is herb and one is a flower garden. So.
So maybe, again, if you find out, we can maybe talk to the park district about how I'll talk to the park district and find out.
I'll ask Mary.
Okay, thanks. Okay, so Eric, do you want to talk about, I know we talked about the EV charging stations. Do you want to talk about your other topic?
I do.
I'll just take off some of my stuff at the bottom because I can just do it. I can do my email like thing for some of it.
Okay, so I'm going to share my screen here, and I'm going to apologize in advance because what I'm going to do is I'm going to basically whip through a presentation. I will send this to everybody, so don't panic that I'm whipping through it. This is on community solar, and we're actually at a decision point now where we've shown our interest with the Metropolitan Mayor's Caucus. I have met with their consultants, and now really the ball's in our court to determine whether we are in a position to take this to the Board of Trustees, because they would have to do a little bit of work on this. So give me just a moment here so I can pull this up. All right, can everybody see my screen?
Yes.
Okay, so again, I'm gonna send this to everybody. This is basically like an internal presentation. So this was, I actually sat through this presentation ages ago at a Metropolitan Mayor's Caucus Energy Subcommittee meeting. And so there's all kinds of stuff in here that, you know, at the end of the presentation that I'm not even gonna cover that you can certainly look at on your own. I'll preface this by saying we have expertise. So basically, the sponsors, the Metropolitan Mayor's Caucus, they branded the program as CS2, Community Solar Clearinghouse Solution. And the program manager is the Power Bureau. So for any of you that have worked with Mark Pruitt before, he is involved in a lot of things. That's his company. And he is very, very good. He's actually a former administrator of FEJA for the state. So he is actually being paid by the Metropolitan Mayor's Caucus to help communities like us out, get all our questions answered and stuff like that. So I'm gonna kind of do a little bit of background on this, even though we've talked about it before. And again, I'll keep it as brief as I can. You know, this shows that roughly 80% of households cannot install a rooftop solar array. And so that really kind of limits their options. And you know, there's all kinds of different reasons why that might be the case. And I would say in River Forest in particular, with the age of our homes, with the amount of shading we have, it's particularly difficult to do rooftop solar. And of course, cost is always an issue as well. So that's really where community solar comes in. Community solar allows basically multiple consumers, so we can have multiple residents within River Forest get shares in a community solar farm. So these are real projects, right? So now we're not now talking about me going with one of the 5,000 companies that sells energy credits. When energy credits, you know, is power that will never reach our grid. Energy credits are basically kind of a way to help facilitate the building of solar projects, but it's you're kind of removed from the real solar that goes on. These are actual farms in the area that have been built, big solar farms that we would actually be buying shares of. And when we do that, not only does that help these farms get built, but we also benefit from the advantages that they get from a cost standpoint gets shared. It's like a basically a communal type thing. That's why it's community solar. So I will talk about this a little bit more. I'm going to skip over the math. I will only tell you that the math is very positive. So what happens is basically the farm generates solar electricity and they get net metering credits from ComEd and, you know, Amgen, whatever their local utility is. And those net metering credits get shared amongst all the subscribers. So you do pretty well financially with subscribing to community solar because you benefit from those net metering credits. You can
just like it would be on your roof almost.
Yeah, in a way, yes, right? So like one of the benefits you have from solar on your rooftop is those net metering credits. So, you know, it is very similar to that. With rooftop, you benefit from some other things as well, but it's similar in that way. So what basically happened with the CS2 program is they went to market. So they went and talked with all these different developers, they negotiated with them, and they signed deals. So they secured pieces of solar farms, actually mostly in Illinois, all within, you know, this area. I'm gonna skip over some of this stuff. And again, that is just for time, guys, I apologize. A lot of this shows the billing structure, the requirements, and how it works from a math standpoint. There's a municipal piece of this and a residential piece. We are kind of talking about both in this case, but really focusing on the residential piece as it relates to this commission. Okay, so right now with the CS2 program, there's 8 communities signed up. Deerfield, Glencoe, Highland Park, you can see the list there. It's actually all the usual communities that are usually kind of at the forefront of taking on projects like this. Of course, our neighbors in Oak Park are always part of that as well.
Except Evanston. For some reason, Evanston's not there.
So that's actually a really interesting point, that when I met with Mark Pruitt, he pointed out that Evanston is part of a different program. They were almost too far ahead of this, and they actually did something kind of before this went to market. And he expects that they will join this when that subscription runs out.
Is better than what they have?
So I think it's easier than what they have. I wouldn't say it's better. I would say because all the heavy lifting has been done by the Metropolitan Mayor's Caucus, this is turnkey, where Evanston had to do all the heavy lifting themselves. They had to go to market, they had to find developers, they had to negotiate. All the stuff is done for us and for them in this program. So the good thing about having 8 communities currently signed up for this is that you know, there's data and there's good information about how the program is working. So there is 3 developers that they are working with currently, and it's on 11 projects. And you can see on this slide that those projects are all in Illinois. I think one might cross the border into Missouri, but essentially they're all local projects, which is so cool in so many ways, because not only is that power most likely in our grid, but we're actually supporting local development of solar projects, which I think is really important. So 11 projects, all the subscription terms and conditions have been negotiated and met. Most of the projects are completed. Some of them come online in the very near future. And the MMC, Metropolitan Mayor's Caucus, is also working with other developers to continue to add volume to this, so more and more communities like ourselves can join. So the other thing the Metropolitan Mayor's Caucus has done with this is they've produced materials, assets, which I think is awesome, right? So, you know, so here's some examples of this is a direct mailer that was done by Highland Park, the city I was born, by the way, very special place. And here's another example of a mailer that Highland Park sent out. The reason I bring this up, here's Northbrook, and by the way, this is web content. The reason I bring it up is because we don't have to reinvent the wheel. The toughest part of a program like this is explaining it to people. And most of that has been done. So we can really utilize a lot of the work that has been done by other communities, as well as the Metropolitan Mayor's Caucus, to go to market with a really good message, a very consistent, very simple message on why this is a good option for our residents. Okay, I'm gonna skip to a completely different document here. So give me one more second here, and then I'll stop hogging the agenda, I promise, kind of.
So while you're looking for that document, Eric, I have a question, because like we, you know, obviously we're doing the community aggregation. Is this like a next step? Would this replace it? Like how do the two jive?
Amazing segue to my slide.
Ooh, and we didn't even plan that.
I know, we should have. That was pretty sweet. Okay, sorry, this is a PowerPoint slide, so it's, I'll try to maximize it for you there. Okay, so that was my, that was kind of my biggest question, is this complementary to aggregation? Does it compete with it? And this was completely designed with aggregation in mind. Every single community that you saw listed there and the 8 that currently have it are, all have aggregation programs. And this, so Mark Pruitt sent me this slide and he first showed it to me on his screen and then he sent it to me. And this kind of explains that, right? So if you start on kind of that left side under consumer types, we're talking about residential right now. And they really have two options. They can get their supply from the default, which for us is ComEd, or because it's allowable in Illinois, they can go with a different retail supplier. When you go with the default supply, it's kind of a done deal, right? Like it's ComEd, it's a fixed, you might do a fixed price product with them. You might do a variable price, like I do a variable price product with them because I have solar. It doesn't matter, but essentially that's how that works. So, you know, that's how the default supply works. Now, how the retail supply chain works is that you have a choice here, right? You can do municipal aggregation, or you can use a retail supplier. If you use a retail supplier, which is, you know, which has a basically a fixed price, you're kind of locked into that. Or you do municipal aggregation, which is what we currently have. And sorry, I'll kind of circle back to community solar on this, but if you do municipal aggregation, you know, as we know, you might have a fixed price, you might have a variable price, and then we get a contribution from ComEd, which is the $30,000 we talked about in the previous conversation. Okay, now if you do the default supply through ComEd, you do have choice. And basically, if you want to do a variable price product, you can. It doesn't change anything. But if you want to do community solar, that is basically an option that you have. And if you do that, the consumer keeps 20% of the net metering credits, which is the financial benefit in doing this. So it's a little bit esoteric, but basically, the two products, aggregation and community solar, don't compete with each other. It's just a choice. If people want to keep it really easy and just stick with, you know, what they have, they're already in the aggregation program and that's great. If they didn't choose the aggregation program, then they're just in the retail program. However, if they choose the community solar option, then that is kind of a different track on this that doesn't compete with that. And there's financial benefit to them. What Mark Pruitt said, and they're seeing this in the 1300 subscribers that they currently have in those 8 communities, is that like the people who are, so aggregation, we made opt out, correct? Right, so if you did nothing, you went into our aggregation program. Community solar is really something somebody would do if they wanted to do, you know, if they were really interested in renewable energy, they couldn't do rooftop solar, and this is the next best thing to that. We're not going to get huge numbers, is basically what everyone is saying. And that's what I talked to Mindy at Oak Park about this, and she said the same thing, which is like, community solar is something for somebody who is particularly enlightened about renewable energy, they're gonna seek out this product and they're gonna sign up for it. Your regular, you know, basically residential power user is not going to do that unless they really have an interest in this. So that's all I'm going to share for now, because like I know time is an issue on this. I can field some questions, but what I'll also do, like I said in the beginning of this, is send out these materials so you can look them over yourself, and then we can get any questions also answered before we bring this to the trustees, because they would have to pass a resolution to do this. There is no financial downside at all. The residents and the Village of River Forest doesn't have to do anything. You don't have to put any money up. There's no potential loss. They have made this program as no-brainers as humanly possible by design.
So the resolution would just make it an option for River Forest residents if they wanted to opt in.
Exactly, Lauren. So the way we would tee this up is we are adding another option into the quiver. So the retail option already exists, aggregation already exists, and we're basically throwing another option out there so that our community has, frankly, a more green option than doing it, you know, than outside of doing it themselves. And by the way, if one person does it in River Forest, it doesn't matter, because we're part of this big pool. There's no minimums. We're not going to get kicked out of the program if only three people sign up. It's, you know, we're part of like this kind of big cooperative. So there's no basically rules or process around it.
I think the one other question that we would probably get is how would someone be able to compare the rates from either sticking with the aggregation, if that's where they're at right now with ComEd, or doing the community solar?
So there's a tool. It's a good question, because right, that's like, you know, one of the first things you'd ask is like, okay, now part of the problem is that you're getting 20% of an unknown number back, right? So just like my rooftop system, I have a really good idea of what I'm going to generate on an annual basis, and it always comes in pretty darn close, but it's right, it's not for sure. Like, you know, it's a weather dependent. So the tool that the MMC built for this basically gives you a really good indication of what the savings would be, with the disclaimer that, you know, it can be better, it can be worse, but not by, you know, historically not by much.
Thanks, Derek. Super cool.
Why would this be preferable than like going to Trajectory's website and just signing up to Clearwater, which is one of the vendors on your own?
So the advantage here is that the resident doesn't have to really do anything. So the registration process is super easy. They've basically spent a lot of time making it very easy. If the resident just directly went to one of these producers, that's actually fine. We've really accomplished the same thing. I think kind of the take on this is, this is a very easy way for residents to enter this program. If they want to be, you know, if they want to do this on their own, the same thing has been achieved, and we're all happy about that.
I had just a couple of points also on what you said, which was, so I actually did do this recently. I went through Trajectory, tried. So you said there are no minimums. There are no minimums in terms of number of households, but Clearwater, the one that I reached, actually does have a minimum in how much energy you use. And I was half their minimum level, so they didn't accept me. So there are minimums in terms of who qualifies, and you flew past requirements, so I couldn't read that.
But I did. So I'll say, I think Susan, you actually have a good perspective on it because you just went through it. This is part of a bigger cooperative, the deal they've negotiated with the producers, with the developers, excuse me.
Yeah, it could be different.
Is that there are no minimums? It does not matter.
No minimums per household.
Not at all.
Oh, that's good. Okay.
Yeah, it's
and cool. The other thing, which is something that you said before, which was when we're comparing aggregation versus community solar. And you actually did say this, Eric, which is that the energy credits produced from what we're doing right now do not benefit our power company. And also, if you think of the air around us, it doesn't benefit us as directly. If, you know, if there's a project in Nebraska or Kansas or something, that's great for the people in Nebraska, but we're still breathing in, you know, all of, so if we can draw down on ComEd, then we're you know, directly respiratorily the beneficiaries of this program. So, that's
we're gonna need help on telling that story.
No, but yeah. This is for this group at least.
But we need, like, that's great what you just said, Susan. And like there's so many up and downstream advantages of doing local community solar projects. And you know, so I think when we do go to market with this, we'll go to market with as good of a message as we can. And then this commission is gonna have to help improve that by telling what all these, you know, other advantages are. Cause that's a great point.
And my last point is that you said that there was no financial downside to this. So I didn't really realize this. Like I didn't realize when we were talking about this, but when I went to sign up and everything, what I didn't really realize is that the community aggregation program really is a hidden tax for the people that are on it. Because if they were to go community solar, then they would personally benefit, you know, the 20% is what most companies are guaranteeing or suggesting that they're going to save. But River Forest, we're reaping it. So this $30,000 that we're taking, we're essentially taking that out from people. And in terms of benefit, it's that, you know, we sort of slipped this by the people who are in this community aggregation because they don't know a lot about it. So they don't realize that. But if they were to become focused, or if anyone were to point it out to them, this is essentially a $30,000 tax that we, you know, and I know that it's legal and everything, but essentially that is what it is. That if an individual had the choice to be in community aggregation or community solar, it'd be crazy to be in community aggregation because you're just giving away that savings to the village. So,
As
people realize that, there could be a loss, but it's a loss in terms of we shouldn't really be, I mean, ideally, we shouldn't really be taking that anyway. And then my last point is that, you know, what the aggregation program does is they cherry pick. So they came in and they evaluate all of the accounts in the village. It's not like anybody can be on community aggregation. They chose the people because they were the most profitable. So, you know, on community solar, everybody's going to have the option to do that, whether or not, you know, they are one of these cherry picked or not. So that's another way in which these programs differentiate. So I think community solar, it will be more, as you said, you know, and Mindy backed up, it will be more difficult to convince people, but it is far more in their own personal interest to sign up for community solar personally than to go through the community aggregation.
Susan, you're our director of marketing for this effort. all really good points. You know, and I think like it's always a good reminder for all of us that all of our sustainability solutions for everything we do is you know, there is never a silver bullet, right? It's having multiple programs that all collectively achieve your objectives. And this is a great example of that. There's basically a hierarchy, you know, and that's what Susan is saying is, on what's the best way to do it. None of them are wrong, right? So if you went online and bought, you know, renewable credits to help offset your energy, there's nothing wrong with that, but there are better ways you can do it. And so, you know, we're gonna have to tell that story of what that hierarchy is. And, you know, I think that'll be challenging, but it's something we're up for.
Marketing materials that exist do not tell that story.
They don't. They're more tactical.
Okay.
All right. And you know, I know we have other agenda items, but I do want to just make a couple quick comments and ask a question, which is, first of all, you know, I know how long this community solar thing has been in the works, so it's pretty amazing to see it actually coming together as something that can be offered in this way to municipalities. So congrats to everybody who worked on that. I know Planet Green's been working on it for a long time, but you know, this is a discussion we can continue offline, but I'm not sure I understand from what you're saying. If you're in the aggregation program, if you know, you're not prevented from also doing signing up for community solar, are you?
You are, because you couldn't do both because you had you need to pick a supplier. And that's not something, Beth, there's more questions kind of, you know, after that, which is how does somebody switch from one program to the other? And I actually don't know the answers to that. I don't know what the rules of our aggregation program are, but I do know you can't do both.
Beth, are you asking at the village level or at the household level?
At the household level?
Okay, because I mean, the village can do both.
And by the way, we're not even talking about the village. You know, the village gets their energy, and I won't say.
Yeah, I know, but I mean.
Right, but by the way.
Okay, well, let's just say that there, I would say, like a significant amount of work needs to be done to understand this ourselves, much less educate other people, because we only signed the aggregation contract last summer, and actually, I'm not sure we've fully communicated that program to people. And if you're saying that by signing up for this, we are saying to residents, we actually have this other thing that we want to encourage you to do, and it's better than this other thing. I mean, I think we really have to do our homework on this, because I'm confused, you know, and I do want to say that I believe it was represented to us that the aggregation program did get its renewable energy credits from Illinois wind farms. That's what was represented to us.
I heard Midwest. I mean, we can check that, but I heard Midwest.
I mean, Beth, I think what you're saying is we just have to make sure that we're basically kind of like explaining, A, first of all, the evolution of community solar and how it actually now is something that is available and it wasn't available, and explain the different, you know, kind of pieces and parts and how it all works together to, you know, kind of to help us reduce, you know, like, you know, greenhouse gas emissions, some of it directly, I get that. And some of it, you know, through credits. And you know what, and while yes, for the community aggregation, people were selected because they wanted to make sure that there was this gap. And I don't think it's a bad thing. I mean, because those folks that are in the program are paying the same amount for their electricity.
Well, and then the other thing that I think we need to, you know, get with Eric or Shannon on is the community solar, the story that we keep saying we want to tell is how each of our actions impacts our village's emission levels. And we went to a great deal of trouble trying to calculate and figure that out for the aggregation. So we would need to be able to say something about the community solar.
I think we can get that data very easily from Mark Pruitt's company.
Yeah, and Beth, again, I think I agree with you that we have to figure out a way to tell this in a way that our residents can understand and embrace and understand the kind of the journey that we're all on.
I have a good idea. People believe kids more than adults, so maybe you four guys can help us.
I like that idea.
Guys, students, do you have any questions?
I don't know totally if you already went over this part, but I'm just curious because you said that River Forest residents won't have to pay anything and there's no financial downside. So where does the funding come from?
So good question. So it basically comes, okay, so the funding for the Metropolitan Mayor's Caucus program came through a grant from the Department of Energy, NREL. National Renewable Energy Laboratory. So that's behind the scenes, right? So the reason like where the program exists was through grants. The 20%, so now moving over to the residential financial side, comes from FEJA, right? So the Future Energy Jobs Act passed in 2016 basically provided huge incentives for both consumers like us as well as companies to do renewable energy projects. And when they do, there was all kinds of different ways for them to benefit financially. And this is just one of them. So like to do that, to use a local example, when you put solar on your roof on your home, you are eligible for all kinds of different financial benefits, including a grant from ComEd to help pay for your inverter, all the way to being able to sell your credits on an open market and make money that way to help pay for your system. For large solar farms, like we're talking about, they're allowed basically to produce energy that partly goes into the grid for ComEd to use, and they get paid for that. And then they get paid, and then they give part of that savings to the consumers that sign up for it. There's other programs as well out there. So it's all basically through government incentives.
So basically you have developers, they're gonna get financial incentives to invest. They're gonna give a portion of that back to the to us, our household investors, and they're gonna make a boatload of money on this. So that's how it gets paid for.
All right, that's an interesting system.
It is, right? It's there's a lot of different interesting systems involved in renewables right now. It's a subsidized industry, but so is oil and gas. So,
great question.
Are there really any downsides to people like signing up for this, or is it just more like a matter of like telling them about it and like telling them how easy it is, or is it not easy?
So the first part broke up, Charlotte. Was
Can you say it again, Charlotte?
Do I like sound better now?
With your video off, yeah, I think that's working.
Okay. I forgot my question. Wait. Are there any like big downsides to signing up for it, or is it just like a matter of like telling people about it?
There is really no downsides. There truly isn't. Like it. The downside for consumers is people tend not to do things they don't understand. And so that's not really a downside for the consumer. It's more a downside for efforts like this, in that if we don't do a good job explaining, and frankly, even if we do a good job messaging, people only have so much capacity to think about things. And this just might not be something that they're interested in doing anything about. And they would just stick with, you know, the retail program. Hopefully they're in aggregation. There's truly no downside.
So I'm thinking if we made some sort of like how to video for just like how to sign up for it, that was like simple and like easy to understand, and we just like promoted that, then we would be able to get like signs.
I love that idea. It's a great idea. We're very flat with our messaging in our media, right? We use web and light social media use. So that's a great idea to have some mix it up and have some video.
It's almost like it sounds too good to be true, because it is, you know? I think that's why it's hard to explain. Like everybody's always looking for like, what's the catch here, you know? But there's no catch.
There really is no catch. Which you're right. Like people won't do this because they're going to be looking for the catch and there isn't one.
Yeah. Or it's too complicated, or, you know, I can't read through all of this. That's why they'll believe you guys.
When did the Metropolitan Caucus come out? Like when did, I guess I want to understand the timing of this in terms of when was it, you know, when did it launch?
It launched
from the caucus.
So what they did, Lisa, is they kind of launched this in a, so some of those communities you saw listed there launched a while ago, like about a year ago. And so they basically, they did that on purpose. They didn't open it up to all the MMC members because they really wanted to take some of the communities that were very interested and very capable in executing on this as pilots. Mm-hmm. And then they opened this up in the fall to general MMC membership.
Is this the same as Oak Park's pilot program? Because theirs was the one through MC Squared.
Yeah.
Yes.
Their aggregation is for MC Squared also.
No, but they also have a pilot community.
Yeah. So Oak Park was part of the pilot for this. That's correct. Okay. So look, there's more we need to do on this. And by the way, like there, in order for us to sign up for this, our Village Board of Trustees has to actually pass a resolution. That's a requirement that the Metropolitan Mayor's Caucus has, which is actually smart, right? Like they want communities to commit to this, not just have a rogue commission, you know, signing up for it. So there are some process things we need to go through. I'm working with Lisa right now. I think we should get this on the Village Board of Trustees radar. In the meantime, if you guys can put together more questions, that's great. And for anything we can't answer, we can easily get support from the Power Bureau, since they're the consultant for this.
I have an ask for the students. Can you guys try to convince your parents to go on this program and tell us how they respond?
Yes, I've had asked them to do solar before, but they
not solar.
This is perfect, Charlotte. This is the product for people who don't want to do solar to do solar.
Yep.
Perfect.
Park. My kids live in Oak Park. And I'm going to ask them to see if they will sign up for Oak Park's program, because I haven't heard that they know about that. And we'll see if they do that.
Hey, Carrie, it'll be interesting to see if they know about it.
Right? I don't think they know about it.
I haven't heard. I mean, I heard about the pilot, but I haven't heard advertising for this. I mean, unless it's the same thing. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So I know this has eaten up a lot of the time. So I will send you guys that presentation that I whipped through in 5 seconds.
Could you put it on the website?
Oh yeah, I'll do that. I won't email it out. I'll put it on the website. I want to encourage usage of our Google.
Yes, the Google Drive. The Drive. Okay, so then next steps would be to read that and then send your questions to Eric. And then if you're in Oak Park or know people in Oak Park, like, you know, see if you can find it and get and you know, see if you can get folks to sign up and then report back in terms of the experience.
So I'll just kind of wrap it up by saying, you know, we have work to do on Soul Smart.
Yeah, we do.
So we need to get to the next level of Soul Smart, because our, you know, bronze was a nice achievement for us, but really to get rooftop solar to be really super easy, we need to get to the next level. Then I feel like we have the quiver we need really to have a full offering for our residents. Very easy rooftop solar option. And then if you can't do that, we have a series of different programs that all complement each other, that, you know, hopefully achieve our objectives as a community, but also an individual residents' objectives as well on renewable energy. So
are you saying we're going to hold back on community solar until we have the next level?
Or no, definitely not. I
work on them at the same time.
Yeah, there's definitely a like shoot first kind of, you know, role that we had got going here. Okay, thanks. Sorry to take so much time up, everybody. Sorry.
Exciting. It's very exciting.
That's good. Okay. Where are we? All right. The next thing we're going to talk about, and let's see if we can, because I know it's already 8:30. Well, actually, that's not too bad. But let's keep going in terms of Lauren, do you want to talk about your waste diversion education program? Or you and your team?
Sure. So we're putting together a deliverable for Earth Day. Here, let me bring up my information. Sorry, I'm on like the squeakiest chair in the world. Okay, so we're putting together a video project in order to bring attention to waste reduction efforts on Earth Day and beyond. The platform we're going to use will enhance community interaction, because we're going to get residents to share ideas with other residents. And then we do want to provide more information on waste reduction, recycling, and composting. So the way that we're going to do that is by using Flipgrid. At least that's our plan right now. I don't know if you guys have heard of Flipgrid before, but it's a software that's used a lot in schools. we're able to create a topic. So in this case, it'd be waste reduction in river forest. And we can send out, you know, a link for you know, where people can go. And what they do is they upload their own short videos of different waste reduction efforts that they do in their daily lives. So, you know, whatever, you know, a kid putting a banana peel in a compost bin, or, you know, crushing cans and putting them in the recycling bin, you know, whatever it may be. And then it goes, it uploads into this platform, and it almost looks like this gallery view I'm looking at in the Zoom. What's cool about it is that you don't have to watch the video in a linear format. You can select on different videos and go back and kind of and do it out of sequence, do it however you want. But it's a neat way then for residents to share their, you know, the different tactics that they use with other residents. And plus, you know, we're gonna really try and get this through the schools and have, you know, kids upload their videos. Everyone likes watching kid videos, especially of their own and their neighbor's kids. So we're hoping to get a lot of views. We're also, so there's going to be an introduction video too. Luke and Charlotte are going to work on that to kind of explain the project and the effort and what we want our residents to, or how we want the residents to use the Flipgrid. And then Catherine's going to be working on, you know, what will be kind of a deeper look or more information type documents for each of the subtopics associated with waste reduction. So I'm really excited about it. We kind of gone down a few paths, but this one feels to be the smoothest, and it allows for residents to upload videos up to the day of Earth Day and beyond, because we're not splicing together their videos and editing them and then uploading them. So it's very, very user-friendly.
But where do you see it? Where, how do you see this?
Yeah, so it'll just be a link to our Flipgrid page topic thing.
It's interesting. So, app, basically.
It's like an app thing. So you know what the way that we would look to distribute it, you know, would be through the village newsletter, posting on the website, and then also through social media, where we would, you know, post the kind of introduction video. And then, you know, within the same message or the same post, post the link to the Flipgrid, and then also our additional information document, kind of all in a single post. So anyway, I'm super jazzed about it. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And I'm interested to see, you know, what everyone shares. So it should be good.
It's great to have something, you know, leading up to Earth Day.
Yeah.
Would be good. Is there anything from the student commissioners working on the project that you want to share to build on what Lauren said?
I think she had it exactly right. I have nothing more to add.
Good for you. Now, John, this is the Flipgrid thing that I think we have to basically just make sure that the village is okay doing. The cool thing about Flipgrid is that at one point you'll see some stuff online, because I did a little research today. And it looks like it's a paid app, but it was purchased by Microsoft in 2018, and it is free. It's predominantly used in schools now. So all the schools are using it for education. So we have to just kind of make sure that we might have to reach out to Microsoft just to say, like, we want to use this for community education, just to make sure that, like, we're not in violation of any sort of software, you know, kind of rules or everything, because they did make it free specifically to kind of drive, again, just I think make it easier for teachers and students to, you know, kind of just kind of invigorate, you know, get people excited about learning.
Yeah. And there is like a drop down that says, like, you know, clubs and organizations, or, you know, it's not just for educators, although that that was the impetus for it, you know, and I think the dominant use as well. But let me know if I'm mistaken, because I, that's, you know, in my little trial run, That was the category I selected. The other thing too that we'll want to, and I know you guys are working on, is just making sure that, you know, although it's the resident who actively uploads their own video to this site, you know, we just want to make sure that we're clear with them that our intent is to post this publicly and share on social media. So there's no confusion about our intended use.
I think those things are all overcomeable, and I love the fact that it's different levels. You have that kind of like, let's try to educate you seriously about waste, and there's an instructional video, and then you have like the community engagement. That would be really a fun thing.
Yeah.
Any questions?
And of course, Luke and Charlotte are going to be, you know, the stars of the intro video. So happy to have them.
Thank you very much. So the next thing we're going to talk about is Meatless Mondays. And I should say it's Meatless Mondays and Meat Free Fridays.
Ellie?
Oh, okay. So I'm going to share my screen. I'll keep it brief because I know that other people need to talk. But can you guys see it? Okay, so our original plan was to present to the board yesterday, but Lisa made the smart suggestion that Carrie make a quick write-up of just some statistics and the goal behind the project. And since our whole committee is like has the main goal of reducing the emissions out of River Forest, I think this is just like reading some of these statistics, this is a really, really efficient way to do it. So we wanted to start with River Forest restaurants because we are a River Forest committee, but we're also going to work with some Oak Park restaurants. And we've already made some calls and talked to a few restaurant managers. And I think either Carrie or Charles has a list of some of the people that we've talked to. We want to start in April, so most likely the next step will be to present at that next board meeting. And I think that the most exciting statistic is this one, the 20% of our residents cut their meat intake by half, our village food emissions will be cut by 1,500 tons annually. That's really impressive, so. I'm just really excited about it.
The disclaimer on that is Shannon has to verify my math.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we have to send it to the metrics maven. Mm-hmm. But I think this is exciting as well.
And then yeah. I think Charles can present, or not present, just talk about what our plans are after we get it through the board.
Yeah, so right now our game plan is that, like assuming this all goes through, we want to like highlight a restaurant probably like every other week, so like two a month, and hopefully we can post it on the village Facebook, like the village's Facebook page. And like hopefully like also the plan is to like try to like work with the restaurants and see if they'd be interested in doing like a meat-free special, like make it exclusive, so like, oh, you should go on like this meat-free Friday because, you know, you can only get the special once. And therefore, like, we'd be helping like the small businesses who obviously need it in this time while still like supporting like village, like the residents reducing their meat intake.
Yeah. I do like the fact that it's helping small business as well. That's an important thing for us, particularly, you know, kind of in a post-COVID world, because I think that there are a lot of them are hurting right now. Yeah, and I think that what Carrie and I talked about is that we could potentially, once we verify the metrics, and if we can get a list of the restaurants that you want to talk to, that we can, I'm hoping I can just basically do an FYI to Kathy, and she would basically, you know, kind of let it go without going to the board. But worst case, the next board meeting is April 13th because they're on spring break. Oh. So, but that's okay. Why don't we just, you know, kind of, once we can get Shannon to kind of give her two cents, then we can, you know, again, like we can put it in front of the village and, you know, we'll put it in front of Kathy and see if, you know, if she thinks it needs to go to the board.
Yeah. The other thing you might check with Shannon on the metrics is, I'm not sure that in the baseline inventory, I mean, I don't think this stops the program from going forward, but in the baseline inventory, I'm not sure that there's something saying, you know, how much just by existing and eating and all of that, how much our village contributes to emissions, so that we would have something to show that 1500 hypothetical tons or whatever as a reduction against. I mean, it probably might just need to be a standalone figure, because I don't think that's part of the baseline as a category, right?
Is that something you think, well, because I know you've been working with the metrics with Shannon, is that something that you potentially can add? Because won't your baseline evolve?
Possibly. I mean, I think the baseline, you know, is things like emissions from energy usage, vehicle miles traveled, you know, I don't remember, but when you talk to Shannon, just ask her if there's a way to have a...
Well, I got this information from a book from the Union of Concerned Scientists, and they do talk about food emissions as a separate...
Right. And I'm just saying, I'm not sure that we have that as a line item in the baseline greenhouse gas emissions inventory.
We would have to know everybody's diet to be able, you know what I mean?
You'd have to make some kind of, you know, assumptions. But Shannon would, you know, being as this is her job, I'm sure she would know how food emissions are addressed.
I just wonder, do you guys think it would seem more doable if you increase the percentage of residents? And because we're just talking about Meatless Mondays, so that's not really half as much meat. It's, you know, depending on, I'm just wondering, like, if we said if 40% of the residents did this, if 40% reduced their meat by 25%, then you'd get that same result. I'm just wondering, I mean, these are just all numbers, but do you think that sounds more doable?
Yeah, what does it currently say?
It says if 20% cut their meat in half.
Oh, yeah. I agree with Susan.
Or maybe, yeah, like say, if you know, if half the residents cut the meat by a quarter.
Actually, I was going to say, and this is, I think we just have to talk to Shannon. I think we had talked about, and this gets into a bad math, that again, Shannon would be the best one to do it, is if we technically, if we're saying Meatless Monday, so one day a week, they're definitely not going to eat meat. Then you just make it, what is that, 14%. But I think that's, again, I think Shannon has to come in and tell us what makes sense. You know what I mean? Because you're just taking one out of 7 days, and you can assume 50% of the population, you know, participates in the program, and, you know, and they don't eat meat that one day. And you could,
right,
you could use, well, a worst scenario and say the rest of the time they're eating meat.
Yeah. We were really hoping that this becomes, it's really a community awareness campaign. You can order from these restaurants, which is a wonderful thing, but hopefully it will make you want to cook less meat at home too. You know, and do kind of initiative.
Yeah, you're trying to form a new habit.
Yeah, we're trying to form a new habit without shoving it down people's throats, except the vegetarian restaurant menu items. But, you know, I mean, just have it be really an awareness. Like, if you just, these statistics that you say, if you cut the, if you cut this, this is what could happen. You know, our own internal matrix, if we as a village do something, this is what, but none of that, we won't be able to really track it.
We won't
be able to track it. So putting it out there saying, if you cut it by half, you know, you, that's the same as whatever they were saying. So, you know, I mean, there's never going to be a way that we can track our own that we'll know. We just won't. So, but as a community awareness campaign, I think it will, you know, you just plant that seed in people's mind.
Yeah, you're giving people, just like Eric said, another, what do you say, another, you know, arrow in the quiver, right? If you want to do something, what can you do? What can you change about your own behavior?
Right. And the easiest way, you know, as Ellie and Charles and I were talking, is to really get these restaurants involved, you know, and the people that we've talked to are seemingly very excited about it too, so.
That's good.
Because even, even if the restaurant owners don't know anything or care very much about the actual cause, it's in their best interest and our best interest that, like, they consider it and that they participate, just because they'll get advertisement and support from the village.
Yeah. These statistics and what is written here is simply for Kathy Aducci to give her blessing. These statistics aren't going to go out to the village unless it's a, like a little blurb, you know, like, oh, you know, that's really, you know, the reason for this is to have her just to get the village blessings on this kind of program.
But I think this is a message that we should get out, because I think that, you know, there are people that are not aware of, you know, just what a significant factor food and food waste and agriculture and yada yada is.
Right. And that could be even like a little Instagram thing, you know, just a fun fact, you know, reduce this. And, you know, you could take each one of these small little points and throw it out there.
There's a British organization, Plant Based News. I don't know if you guys follow it. They have Facebook and Instagram, but they're putting out really good statistics. Do you follow it, Charles?
I do.
Yeah, don't they put out great statistics all the time?
They do. Yeah, they do.
What was that organization again?
Plant Based News.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of celebrities coming out now. What's his name? A lot of celebrities coming out. Kim Kardashian is one of them. Leonardo DiCaprio, just urging people to, you know, to follow a plant-based diet. And also just in terms of like marketing, it's better to say plant-based diet instead of vegetarian, because it implies you don't have to be, you know, 100% vegetarian. It's just you're making a coordinated, you know, you're making a concentrated effort to eat a plant-based diet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah. So work with Shannon on the stats. Like, if you have your list of people you're talking to, again, of course, Kathy's going to care more about, and she should. We'll care more about River Forest restaurants. You know, but certainly, you know, again, we'll expand to our neighbors to the north and to the south and to the east and to the west. All of them. Okay.
Can I mention one thing about the Healthy Lawns before we go? Or I don't know if you're winding down, but that seminar is before our next meeting at the Zoom seminar at the library with the Midwest Grows Green. That's on the 10th of April. And our meeting is on the 13th.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hoping that we all will join in on that. It's at 2:00 at the library Zoom meeting with Midwest Grows Green and Lisa, who's the other person? Yeah.
Oh, the Deep Roots Project. Midwest Grows Green engineer with a name that I cannot even say.
I don't know his name. Yeah. But, you know, all about talking about how to keep your lawns healthy without the pesticides. So that is on the 10th at 2:00.
Right. And that's the River Forest Public Library, and it's already on their calendar. And Carrie, do you want me to send the flyer to Sarah?
Oh, I thought you had already done that.
No, do you want me to? I sent you an email to say, because it probably we should start the rotation next week anyway. But I can send it out and then I'll forward it to you guys too.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. All right, the last thing we'll just quickly go through is the strategic plan. You know, we've got a strategic plan, and I know there's conversations about, and I've had animated conversations actually with Kathy Aducci, who basically is like, well, it's a climate action plan. And I'm like, it's not a climate action plan. Right now it's a sustainability plan. So I wanted to share with you kind of a deck that I pulled together for myself, quite frankly. I think because I'm in advertising, I explain things to myself through storytelling, through decks. So I have a deck that I'm going to quickly go through, and I would love your input on it. So I will basically share it quick, and then we'll do this, you know, ask questions and that kind of thing. But it does lead to a bigger conversations, and I'll send out an email that we do need to update our strategic action plan for 2021. I mean, we created that a year ago, you know, again, as part of, you know, Julie wanting to make sure that she left everything neat and tidy. We now have this plan. So we really do need to go in. I can put it on Google Docs, and for your programs, we should really update it. And I'll make sure there's clear instructions in terms of, we're now in fiscal year 20, you know, we're in the calendar year 21. So, okay, so I personally think we did a whole heck of a lot despite COVID with regard to, you know, kind of some of the progress we've made with the bike plan is obviously moving forward. Pollinator for Parkway program has done well. Hopefully, Susan, we can distribute that last raised bed garden and help Trinity with their, you know, kind of since they're back in school. So we just need to update current status. You know, add in metrics that are important to keep track of, and then really just kind of state what we're hoping to achieve this year. So we just kind of are all kind of align on, yeah, this makes sense as our sustainability plan. I'm going to share my screen quickly and go through, at least I hope I will, something that I pulled together. And I have to thank, you know, Susan, because it scares the heck out of me, because I think a climate action plan is a lot of time and energy, but I think that we can at least start exploring it. And I think it starts with like understanding what it is and what it isn't. And again, I've had a number of kind of conversations with folks who think that we already have one. And we, again, our plan is a great plan. We just need to kind of take it to the next level. If we can, and we have to figure out how best to do it. But and I wanted to start by putting this into context, because I think it's important that, okay, we have a strategic action plan, right? And really, and that's from a river forest level. And we do participate in Planet Green at a local level. Now, the village of River Forest has signed on to the Chicago Climate Charter, which is really a North American effort, which then really ties up to the Paris Agreement. So we really, if you think about it, from our little town River Forest, if you think about what we're trying to do locally and how we're tying it to North America, you know, to kind of a broader region, and then North America to the Paris Agreement, I think we can, you know, kind of tell that story, and we should tell that story. But there are differences, and this is something that I got from a climate action plan guide that's from 2014. So this is old. If somebody has better information, I would love to see it. But a climate action plan is really focused on mitigating climate change and reducing greenhouse gas emissions over and out, right? A sustainability plan, on the other hand, is broader, right? And it talks about a lot of the environmental, economic, and social considerations. It goes beyond climate change. So like what Planet Green is doing now, Susan, means that they're obviously setting themselves up. You know, they're focusing, which is good. You know, they're again going into some of the social justice considerations, which kind of keeps them at sustainability, but the focus has them potentially going up to climate action.
Well, a lot of climate action plans do have a social equity component to it, because it's telling you how you're going to do it, and you're going to do it in an equitable way. Since, mm-hmm. you know, often the people who are most burdened by a poor climate are the ones who are least able to deal with it.
Yeah, that's true. Yep. So then basically what should be in a climate action plan? And this is where you can get into, you know, kind of, do we have one or do we not have one, quite frankly? And this is from a document that it's the Burlington government, you know, they did some research. And so the Burlington, Vermont has their sustainability plan. And what I think, I was trying to get to minimum, like at a minimum, what do we need? And we need an inventory of existing emissions, which we do have, because we've started measuring those metrics. We need reduction goals or targets, which I'm not sure we have yet. And then we need to prioritize our actions. which I think we started talking about even today in terms of what are the big nuts that, you know, what are the big things we do that would actually make a big difference. But then, you know, ideally, if you go to the other spectrum in terms of a climate action plan, there would be an implementation strategy, there would be identification of required resources and funding. And that's where it kind of goes beyond kind of where we are now, right? If we look at our current goals and targets, if we look at our plan, which was built, was really, if we think about it, the strategic action plan is a culmination of work that started when the Sustainability Commission was put in place in 2017. So we're really only, we're in our fourth year right now. And overall, we say reduce the level of greenhouse gas emissions. We don't put a number in. Planet Green, which predates, like, you know, goes back to 2011, they did put metrics in. The climate action, the Chicago Climate Action Charter, which is 2017, again, it kind of aligns with the Sustainability Commission. We basically, it just says achieve a percent reduction in carbon emissions in line with the Paris Agreement. And then the Paris Agreement, which is only was only signed in, or started in 2016, is become carbon neutral by 2050. Now, we could say that our goals are tied to Planet Green because we're part of Planet Green.
And we also, Kathy also signed that, or the board signed that.
Yeah.
They signed a commitment to those goals.
Yes. Yes. But we, for whatever reason, we've never pulled them into our documents. And I don't know. But yes, you can make that connection that we signed here. So reduce greenhouse gas emissions to 30% below 2007 levels by 2020, 35% by 2025, 45% by 2030. And they did at least through 2018 measure. And then here's obviously our metrics, the baseline metrics we have today. And Sharon is updating these because we did promise we'd share them with the board to say, okay, where are we? So John, thank you very much. We've gotten all the information we think we need. We still need to figure out how to get freight train and how to get water and wastewater energy. So Shannon and I are, and Beth, I might drag you into that with us to try to figure out how we might get those, just so we have them.
Will these be made public once they're finalized?
These were made public. This was made public last year.
Where would the public find it?
This is at the bottom of the strategic, it's at the end of the strategic plan. The PDF.
And actually, yeah, I mean, I do think that that's something I have been thinking about, but Shannon and I haven't had a chance to figure it out, is again, that whole education thing, right? It's been a lot of work to pull the information together, just like on all these initiatives that are going on, and figuring out how to communicate it to people is a whole nother project. And there must be an updated version of this chart, because Shannon and I did figure out the forest lands diversion number, so.
Yeah, I don't have that one, but yeah, Shannon told me today that we have that, so that's good. But we still need to figure out freight train and that kind of thing. And you're right. I mean, Beth, as our kind of, you're turning into our outreach person to the, you know, to the community. How do we tell the story in a manner? So it's public, but it's not public, right? I mean, you can find it, but
it's kind of buried. I mean, probably not too many people are reading the strategic plan.
Yeah. And then basically, though, if you look at the Planet Green, unfortunately, report card, overall in 2018, it was a D.
But this was before our community aggregation program.
Correct. But this was a D+ across Oak Park River Forest. They didn't, you know, kind of split us out. But I put this in here because, yeah, in some ways, what's going to happen is our aggregation program is going to offset this 49,000, and the estimate is it'll be a 50% reduction, but we're going to wait to have
offset.
Thank you. but yes, we're excited because we're going to measure this and see some sort of difference. And yes, we'll do better than we have been in the past because of that, which is good. And then I was just trying to figure out, just trying to say, okay, so where are we with regard to our strategic plan? And again, we could put on the table, and this is a draft document of, you know, is like, we potentially could say that our strategic plan is a base level climate action plan. If you assume that we do inventory our existing emissions, we have that, and we'll have an updated thing. We take the Planet Green target, and then if you basically say that our inventory of existing emissions is our prioritized reduction action, whatever. So,
but Lisa, I suppose we could make the argument that we have the minimal bare bone climate action plan, but what's missing from what we have is how we're going to reach our goals.
Exactly. Implementation strategy and this.
To say that we're going to reach it and not have a plan about how we're going to reach it, then.
No, I'm agreeing with you, Susan.
Okay.
Totally. So anyway, I'll send this out. And to me, it was just wrapping my head around it. And again, I also was using it to educate some people in, in the village in terms of like what we have and what we don't have.
Yeah, I think it's really useful the way that you distinguished that very first slide, the distinguish between the climate action plan and the sustainability plan and the idea that a sustainability plan is actually broader, because I think that's kind of an underlying tension that, we have is, are we going to drive single-mindedly just, towards emissions reductions, or are we going to continue to value and put time and energy and resources into things that might not strictly immediately directly reduce emissions in a significant way, but are part of this broader kind of, sustainability lifestyle or something.
Yeah. I'm just putting it out there as something for, future discussion, because this is a big meaty topic that I certainly don't have all the answers in. And I learned a lot just by pulling this together myself. So I just wanted to kind of share it as a foundation for kind of future conversation.
And Beth, I just want to say something to adjust your point, which is I think that if you're talking about like sequestration is not included in the reduction of emissions, that as we incorporate that into our inventory, as you and Shannon have done with the forest offsets, that really, it's a way that you're looking at it. If you look at it more holistically, there has to be sequestration of carbon to reach any of these goals. So it's just a matter of measuring it. And this was a starting point, because you have to start somewhere.
Oh, exactly. And now we are committed for measuring it annually, at the very least. So it is now 9:00. I think that is enough for.
That was a lot.
I know.
It was a meeting. It was a meeting.
So I'm a little fried, but I think we covered everything. I don't know. David, you've lasted with us. I'm very impressed with you. All right. Any other comments, thoughts, suggestions?
I was just going to say, I just think it would be nice if as many of us as possible could be on the film that we're sponsoring on Friday.
What time is it on Friday, Susan?
Well, it says 6:30 to 9:00, but that includes the discussion.
Yeah, the film itself is about an hour long, a little over an hour.
Have you watched it, Beth?
I did, and I'm sending some action items, or I did send some, and I'll send some more to Anna.
It's a really beautiful film, and some years all of the films in the film festival, like each one is more depressing than the last, and there were a lot of uplifting films this year, which is really nice. Oh, and I also wanted to point out to the compost people that the film Kiss the Ground that I was talking about earlier, the last half hour of that talks a lot about composting and highlights San Francisco's composting program, which what they do is they actually financially penalize people for having trash, and they find that it works. That your compost is free, I think, and you get penalized for having trash. So, you know, we kind of do the opposite, and it's just, you know, again, we're not going to go from where we are today and make that jump, but it's an interesting idea to move in that direction, that people who are doing what is right for the earth are actually financially rewarded instead of financially penalized.
Yeah. What was the name of that film one more time, Susan?
Kiss the Ground. And it's available. It's available on Netflix. They're showing it Saturday morning at 11. And this is one that they highlight as being good for teens. So maybe you teens want to watch this one. Oh, and then the Young Filmmakers Contest. Do you guys know about that? That's on Saturday at 3:00. And so those are always great films too.
I did see one from last year's contest, the Best Little Farm or the Greatest Little Farm.
Yeah, that's a wonderful, that used to be on Netflix. I don't know if it's still,
that
was available on Netflix.
Yeah, I think I rented it through the library. It was a great, great little movie.
Yeah, there's some really good ones this year. Gather is a really wonderful film about just basically how the U.S. government killed off the food supply of the Native Americans in order to control them and you know, to devastating effect in terms of the Great Plains and, you know, the death toll.
The bison.
The bison. Yeah. I mean, they killed millions and millions of bison and you know, just led to the roots of the problems that, you know, lead up right to today with just the high rates of child diabetes among the Native Americans and why they were hit so hard by COVID.
Were you going to send out a link for that film on Friday?
Did you walk the dog?
So you sign up through the One Earth Film Festival.
Okay, but it was at 6:00?
6:30.
6:30,
okay. 6:30, okay.
I can, if you want, I can send something. Would that be helpful, Carrie?
No, that's I just didn't know the time. Okay. I've already watched it, but I'll watch it again.
Even if we don't want to watch the film, like if we hopped on for the panel, it just might be nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I'll ask Sarah to send a reminder. It's, you know, it was in that the One Earth Film Festival, and our sponsorship of Nature Makers was in the email on Friday. So I'll make sure she sends something out this week. I'm sure she's already on top of it.
I guess the park, I don't know if they sponsored a whole film, but the River Forest Park just was listed as supporting. I was shocked, but I was so shocked I even clarified it, but yes, they supported it as well.
Okay, any other comments? Otherwise, do I have a motion to end our meeting?
Move to adjourn.
Do I have a second?
Great work, everyone.
Great meeting you.
Bye.
Thanks, everyone. Have a great night.
Bye. Bye.